Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Baltimore Sports Talk with your hosts Rob McQuay and Jeff Coles, also featuring Philly Jeff Dye. Now, get your game on.
All right, well, it is Baltimore Sports Talk here on a Thursday afternoon here in good old Balmer, and the Ravens continue to slide. The Kansas City Royals continue to anger me by beating up on the Mets. We have some undefeated teams, one of which going this evening on Thursday Night Football. And Manny Machado is listed as a finalist for a Gold Glove for this past year. I'm Rob McQuay, your host. Jeff Coles is my co-host in Mount Vernon, Ohio. Jeff, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Hey, as much as the KC Royals, anger me too, I've got to say that it's kind of muted because they are beating the Mets.
The Mets. And we go back to 69, Jeff. We go back to 69. Hey, listen, we have a special guest on today. We do have our normal guest, Philly Jeff, coming on the show. But we have a special guest that we're going to bring on here this afternoon. Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio is going to join us here this afternoon. And, Freddie, how's it going?
Everything is good, gentlemen. And don't be hating on my
Mets.
They got enough problems as it is.
Hey, Freddie. Yeah, we were kind of hoping. I kind of figured you were a Mets fan.
Uh-huh. Well, I have a lot of love for the Kansas City Royals. I love the way they play. I love their lineup, that 1-9. There is not an easy out in that lineup, and their pitching staff led by their bullpen, they have those flamethrowers coming out of the bullpen that have been terrific. So I have a lot of love and respect for them, but that love and respect is getting less and less as this series continues to go along and not in favor of my New York Mets.
Yeah, see Freddie, that's kind of where I was last year until they swept the Orioles in the AL championship. And so now I really hate them. And I'm actually kind of by default a Mets fan this year. So there we are. What do you do to beat the Royals? I mean, the Mets had it. They had it all sewn up the other night. Familia hasn't given up blown a save since what? June or July?
Yeah, July 30th, the last time he blew a save, he had 21 straight chances that he was able to convert. The way you're going to have to beat Kansas City is that you have to do to them what they do to you, and that is you have to win that mental game. Jacob DeGrom even talked about it last night, that it seemed that any time he thought he made the perfect pitch, they were able to foul it off until they got the pitch they wanted, and then they get 1, 2, 3, 4 singles in that pivotal fifth inning where they scored 4 runs. You have to win that Operation Mind Crime because they're so good at winning that battle. This team has no fear because they look at all the situations that they were in, even in this postseason, where it seemed like that they were going to lose that game, and they don't. They don't lose game 4 to Houston, down 2-1 in that series, 6-2 in the seventh inning on the road. They don't lose game 6 at home when Jose Bautista hit a home run to tie the game at 3, and I firmly believed that if the Blue Jays had won game 6 in Kansas City, they were going to ride that momentum and win game 7. You have to do to them, but it's very hard to do that when they've been outstanding at it and they have not allowed any team to beat them at that mental game that they've been so good at the last two postseasons.
What about going to New York now? Do the Mets have any advantage over the Royals in New York?
Well, the one thing, I don't know if it's an advantage, but the one thing the Mets have to realize that is in their favor is that they know that this can be done. Because a lot of people back in 1996, when the Yankees lost the first two games at home in the World Series to the Atlanta Braves, people had last rites for that baseball team, and the Braves did not wind up winning another game. If you go back to 1986, the Mets lose the first two games at home to the Boston Red Sox, and then the Red Sox only won one more game after that. The Mets won in 7. So that precedent is there that, hey, the Kansas Kansas City Royals did their job. They were able to hold serve at home. We had a chance to steal game one. We didn't do it. They were able to make the plays and not make errors like we did. But now we're going back to our home ballpark. We've had success there. That's the one thing they have to use. But it's only an advantage if you have the crowd on your side and you give them a reason to stay on your side. We've seen Kansas City do that in games one and two. It's not about the electricity that the crowd brings to your team. It's what you're going to do to increase that electricity and make it hard for the opposing team to even think or do anything properly, because you've given the fans a reason to continue to stand up, scream, and shout and have that work in your favor.
Yeah. I want to switch gears a little bit, but staying in baseball, because we're going to bring Philly Jeff in here in a second. But Jeff Coles, give us the brief story on Lenny Dykstra here.
Well, there's a couple of stories out here, but basically what Lenny Dykstra was saying, I think on the Herd on ESPN, was that he was sending private investigators out, and he actually paid out like $500,000 to basically go behind umpires, find out where they were hanging out, you know, if they were gambling or if there was any infidelity going on or whatever, and use that information to basically coerce them into shrinking the strike zone. And, you know, I think he led the league in walks, didn't he? Was it back in the 90s or whatever, but...
Now this is when he's playing. So are you saying that when he would come up to the plate, he had some conversation with the umpire?
Well, I guess it apparently stemmed from arguments over calls or argument from whatever that might be. Maybe not just walk up and say anything. That's what I'm gathering. I haven't really heard everything, but there are umpires that are saying, you know, this can't possibly happen, because how many times does a particular umpire, you know, cross paths with a particular player and do the math?
Right.
I don't know.
Philly Jeff, do you know this story? And I got to ask you, what do you think about Lenny Dykstra and this story?
Well, see, how's the best way to put this? It's kind of like Pete Rose. It's the two sides of it, the baseball side when they, you know, they played good baseball, and then once they got out, you know, they're just, I mean, Lenny Dykstra is not a good guy. I mean, just personally, he's not a good guy. I mean, I rooted hard for him when he played for the Phillies and such, but, I don't see either of these guys, from a personal standpoint. They're, what's a fair way to say? They're scumbags.
Hey, Freddie, do you know anything about this story?
Yeah, I heard about that story, too, when he appeared on that radio show with Colin Cowherd. And I guess I've gotten to the point where I look at certain individuals and I say to myself, okay, that really doesn't surprise me that anybody along the lines of Lenny Dykstra would go out and do something like that. And now he wants to profit off of that information that he had to sell as many books as possible. So once again, to me, he's doing something for himself and for all the wrong reasons. That's exactly how he lived his life before, during, and after baseball. That's exactly what kind of ball player he was. And that toughness was terrific if he was on your team, whether he played for the team that I love, the New York Mets or the Philadelphia Phillies. You knew that he was going to battle tooth and nail and not back down. That makes you a great ball player, but it makes you a lousy human being, and he's been a lousy human being for God knows how long.
Amen.
So the fact that he's going to try to profit off of being a lousy human being leads to what my dad always told me a long time ago: sometimes life is not fair.
Yeah. And, these guys know this, Freddie, but I'm an umpire, high school and youth league and men's umpire. I can't imagine somebody coming up to the plate and saying, hey, you know, I saw you so-and-so with such-and-such. You better give me a favorable strike. So
you're going to have to watch yourself, Rob, I think.
That's right.
Well, if that situation happened, what would you have done? That's the question. That's the answer I like to hear. If that situation was there in front of you, what would you have done?
Well, I guess it would depend on what dirt he had on me. I don't know.
Right. Right. And that's
There's an interesting, scenario in here, and that is, one of the things that he was trying to find out is about umpires' gambling habits.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing those habits and knowing, what the rules are in baseball about gambling,
right.
Would that make Lenny Dykstra some kind of accessory after the fact?
Well, it could be along the same lines of Jose Canseco in his book Juice, but people crushed him time and time again. But in that book, he named names. He said this player, right. that player, this player, and it turns out that Jose Canseco, who's not a real good human being anyway, was perfect. His batting average was perfect with the guys that he named that wound up being part of any kind of steroids report that happened in Major League Baseball. I wonder how many names, if he's named any names in this book, and based on that interview, it didn't seem that was the case. But can you imagine if he named names, or if he does name names in his book, then what kind of scandal is that going to be for Major League Baseball, that if these umpires were so afraid of any information, any intel that he had that was 100% accurate, that compromises a game? He becomes a confidence man in the game of baseball, having things working out well for him.
You're absolutely right. I really hadn't thought about all the repercussions to that. That's one that I guess we're just going to have to kind of sit and watch and wait and see what happens. But wow, that's crazy stuff. Freddie, you were talking, before with the Royals. You're talking about emotion and I guess kind of a clubhouse chemistry and all that kind of stuff. Let's talk a little bit about, and this is a warm-up for tonight, let's talk a little bit about the Miami Dolphins, because since Philbin was fired and Carpenter's taken over, the Miami Dolphins have looked like a completely different football team, and it has to do, I think, with passion, emotion, what he's getting out of that clubhouse, out of that locker room, and what these guys are doing on the field. Now, I think they can go out and beat the New England Patriots tonight, although that's going to be obviously a tough task. But how far do you think that goes, Freddie, the locker room chemistry, the passion of the coach and all that kind of stuff, and what you've seen with the Dolphins over the last 2 weeks?
Well, you have to believe in the people that you put your trust in, that they're going to put the right kind of game plan or will make the right decisions for your team on the football field, and there was absolutely none of that going on with Miami. And you could clearly tell the final game that Joe Philbin coached this team when they played the Jets in London, England. The players were like, they didn't even want to be there or play for him. And when you have that, when you have that kind of separation in your locker room, it's very hard to find a way to build that back up, especially in a coach where they've seen that, hey, the last couple of years we had chances to go to the playoffs and we were not able to get it done because we didn't trust that this guy would find a way to make sure we could do that. Now, I thought it was an indictment against Joe Philbin that Dan Campbell in his first press conference said that we're going to be tough, we're going to be aggressive, we're not going to sit back, and we're not going to be pansies. And I'm using a different word than the word that he used in that press conference to discuss exactly what was going to happen. So the one thing, it's not so much that people believe that Miami can beat the Patriots tonight. I think the Dolphins believe that, and I think we can say that for the first time probably in a long, long time with this football team, because now they've gone into the last couple of games thinking, you know what, there's no way that team on the other side should beat us. There's no way that team on the other side should be within 10 points of us, and they've gone out there and executed. Now, when you play the Patriots, that's going to be a tall order because we know the AFC East goes through New England, and I'm sure the Patriots are loving a situation like, oh, you think you're the new bullies on the block. That didn't work for Rex Ryan in Buffalo.
Right.
You guys are on right now. But if this continues, if that's the kind of guy they have and he gets the most out of those players, they may not win tonight, but they may turn to be a better team in the future. And that's exactly what this team and this organization needs.
Well, look at the Dolphins heading into the game 2 weeks ago with the Titans. The Dolphins were 1-3, and they were going up against the Titans team. That was, probably 1-3 or well, I guess they had to have been 1-3 because they're 1-5 now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they beat them, and then they play the Texans, who are 2-5 at this point. So bad teams that they've beaten. And I'm hearing a lot about, you know, well, the Dolphins, they haven't, you know, they haven't beaten anybody. They beat the Redskins and Titans and the Texans, so that they haven't beaten anybody. I want to look for a second at the New England Patriots, because obviously the Patriots are 6-0 and, you know, great. But, I mean, guys, the combined win-loss for the teams that they've beaten is 18-22, okay? The Steelers have a winning record. The Jets have a winning record. The Bills, Jags, Cowboys, and Colts all have losing records. So how good actually are the New England Patriots? And that's my question right now.
I think they're extremely good, because you mentioned the teams that they've beaten, but the Cowboys have a lot of talent. But you can't have that talent and lose Dez Bryant and Tony Romo and don't think it's not going to have an effect on your team. They're already in their third quarterback this season in Matt Castle. The Pittsburgh Steelers, that was opening night, and the Steelers gave the Patriots everything they could handle. They've still been able to do that, and they played three quarterbacks so far. So I think that's the difference between the Patriots and how – they've beaten their opponents and the opponents that they face compared to Miami. Miami had two wounded animals, and the Tennessee Titans, where Mariota's a rookie quarterback. The Houston Texans are an absolute mess. I mean, if Miami couldn't beat both of those teams with a new coaching change, then you know it's going to be a lost season for that football team. They were looking to find any kind of confidence they could have to believe they can get back on the track that they felt they should have been on at the beginning of the year, challenging for a playoff spot in the AFC, and it was a perfect storm for them. They moved Joe Philbin out of the way. These two gazelles come in that are wounded, and they chomped on them like a cheetah and took care of business. Well, we're going to find out now where they stand, because the Patriots know. They're like, look, you're not coming here to say you're going to beat us and really get a lot of confidence. We're going to shut that down as best as we can. But the Patriots teams that they played, there's talent on those teams. They may not have had the best of seasons so far, but easily the talent that they faced and beaten so far has been a lot better than what Miami has done, and not just in the last 2 weeks.
Right, right. I just wonder what the if the Dolphins had been able to, you know, make this change before now, how where they would sit. I mean, because look, they played the Redskins, the Jags, the Bills, the Jets, the Titans and the Texans, and really out of those teams right now, the Jets are the only team that really look like a good ball club. So anyway, tonight should be interesting. You guys have any predictions? I mean, does everybody think New England's going to win? It is in New England, isn't it?
Well, they're, 117-0 at Gillette Stadium if they're winning after halftime or something like that.
I got the Patriots winning 27-20. I mean, I don't see the Dolphins beating them unless Tom Brady throws the ball backwards, and even then, they still might win 21-20.
Hey, Philly Jeff, what, you want to chime in on this one?
Well, keep in mind, you know, I'm sitting here knowing that my Philadelphia Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl because they told me that. Don't look at that 3-4 record. I have a bold prediction for this weekend. The Eagles will not lose. Of course, they're on the bye week, but they got to figure out Sam Bradford, because he's got a, you know, they're counting too much on a guy that, you know. But I also wanted to take a second just to say that I've been listening to Mr. Coleman for how many years? Many years, and you know, I appreciate he's up on the New York side, and for obviously from coming to Philadelphia, they're pretty much our arch enemies on all this stuff. But I think that Freddie Coleman has got it all figured out. Maybe has one of the best voices in all of sports, and I tip my hat.
Thank you, my man. Appreciate that.
Sure enough, and you know, let's go. Let's do the cheer. M-E-T-S, Mets, Mets, Mets. You know, if my boys are out of it, I'll root for the Mets. Of course, my guys were out of it by what? The All-Star break?
So. Yeah. I think they were out before they even started, weren't they? All right. Hey, Freddie, Denver, Green Bay this weekend. I'm curious to see what your thoughts are, because, Denver, to me, the offense just and is this Peyton's last year? What are your thoughts on Denver right now?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because I said before the season I thought it would be Peyton Manning's last year. I just thought that all the injuries and the advancing age would be too much, and it would be in a situation. That's why they brought Gary Kubiak in, so he wouldn't have to do as much. And so far, that's been proven with seven touchdowns and 10 interceptions. I think they're two elite teams in the NFL. New England is one, and Green Bay is the other. I think Denver's defense is elite, but Green Bay's defense, they're not that far behind either. With Clay Matthews Jr. all over the place, their secondary has been terrific. They've got that inside pass rush led by B.J. Raji and Dayton Jones, so that has been able to work out. But they have one of the three best players in the National Football League on their team in Aaron Rodgers. And if it's a firefight, well, there's no way Peyton Manning of 2015 will be able to match up. Peyton Manning of 2005? Absolutely. Peyton Manning of 2013? Absolutely. But not Peyton Manning of 2015. I just think if I'm Green Bay, I'm daring him to beat me with the passing game. I'm not even letting that running game have any kind of confidence. Now, can he have a turn back the clock game? Maybe. But Aaron Rodgers relishes competition like this. I think when it's all said and done, it'll be a good ball game. But that Denver Broncos defense will be out there too much, and that'll be the telling point. That's why I think Green Bay wins this one on Sunday.
And home field advantage for Denver, not much much of a factor here?
No, because Green Bay, we've seen this team go into Seattle, looking to belly the beast of the best home field advantage in the NFL. And for two and a half, three quarters in the NFC Championship game, they were the better team and had a double-digit lead with a guy that has a better arm in Russell Wilson right now than Peyton Manning does for the Denver Broncos. So if they can go into there and look that team in the eye and almost beat them, if it wasn't for a special teams gaffe, then they're not going to fear a Peyton Manning, an aging Hall of Fame quarterback on the other side, and a terrific defense, because they're thinking, look, we've gone against terrific defenses all year long. We know you're good, but we feel our offense is better, and we'll make plays down the field.
Yeah. All right, we got 8 minutes left in the show, and now I want to switch it back to Baltimore, since it is Baltimore Sports Talk. Boy, Freddie, not a great year in Charm City on either side, but a little bit of glimmer here. I mentioned at the top of the show, Manny Machado, finalist for a Gold Glove this year. Curious your thoughts on that. And my other Oriole question is, will they re-sign Chris Davis, or is Chris Davis gone? And if so, just in your opinion, where do you think he goes if he doesn't stay in Baltimore?
Well, Manny Machado has been a terrific player. He's only going to get better. As great as he's been so far in his young career, I think he's only scratching the surface of how great he's going to be as one of the best two-way players, especially two-way infield players in Major League Baseball. So I'm not surprised that he was a finalist for the Gold Glove, and I think that's the guy you build your team around. As far as Chris Davis is concerned, he's had a great bounce back from what happened a couple of years ago, the whole PED thing, after he swore up and down that he wasn't doing that sort of thing. But if you're Baltimore, you have to really gauge that, okay, we know we're going to get a lot of home runs, but we're going to get a lot of air conditioning with swing and misses from this guy at the plate. And at a certain point, when does that become too much of a what price paradise situation with the Baltimore Orioles? So I could see them letting him go, because I mean, he may not price himself out of the market, but if you're the Orioles, you feel that you have talent on the farm that is waiting to come up, and Chris Davis is in the way of the guys that you feel you're going to need to surround Manny Machado. Now, on the free agent market, he's going to attract a pretty decent amount of attention from teams that are looking for a left-handed bat that can knock the ball over the fence. But I also wonder how much have we seen with the Kansas City Royals, what they've been able to do, and the St. Louis Cardinals, guys that don't give away at bats and don't just swing and miss and swing and miss. How much of that could affect the asking price with Chris Davis, who is clearly not the kind of ball player that teams may look for, despite the fact that he can hit maybe 35 to 40 home runs. It's going to be very interesting if a team overpays for him. It's not going to be a contender. It's going to be a team hoping that they can get him, that it's going to help, that he won't be as much of a swing and misser, and that they have enough pieces around him where that's going to really help their ball club in the future.
Yeah. And we've talked about this a good bit here, and that is that the Orioles, they've got to get pitching. They've got to get starting pitching. And I'd rather them go out and try to find a real ace, or at least as close as they can get to an ace, than all the home runs. We'll see how that plays out. What the heck has happened to the Baltimore Ravens, in your opinion?
It's snakebite, apparently, because I don't think I can remember a team losing so many close games late. I mean, opening day, they lose 19-13 to Denver, not an offensive touchdown scored in that game. They lose to the Raiders down the stretch. The one game they did win over Pittsburgh, they were able to find a way to win that ball game. And I wonder that if Ben Roethlisberger is healthy, would the Baltimore Ravens be winless? Then you have this Monday night with the tooth and nail with the Arizona Cardinals, but yet it seemed like any time they needed a play to happen, they just fell short or they were an inch or two away. And we can say that, yeah, losing Terrell Suggs, their heart and soul has affected his football team, but they played a lot more games without him than they had with him. So you should be used to that by now if you're the Baltimore Ravens. So whatever has gone on this season, and we've seen this some years, no matter what you do, no matter what you try, it's just not going to work out. And for the first time under John Harbaugh, we're seeing that from the Baltimore Ravens, because they're a really good team, or a good team with a terrible record. But your record tells who you are. They deserve to be where they are, only one win, because they have not been able to make those plays or keep other teams from making those plays against them. And now, if you're John Harbaugh, you have to really make sure that this team doesn't just mail it in for the rest of the season, because it's kind of hard to stay motivated. And you say to yourself, okay, we're motivated, but then we go out there and we lose another game. That'll ebb away at that if you're not careful with this season with the Baltimore Ravens.
Well, they are the worst – or they are the best worst team in the NFL. In other words, you alluded to it. The game that they lost the other night was by 8 points, and that's the most points that they've lost any game in. And again, Jeff, we've talked about this. The defense is terrible. Honestly, I didn't think losing Suggs that first week was going to be as big of an issue. Now it seems like it is, because they have absolutely no pass rush unless they blitz. And when they blitz, they're in man coverage, and they don't – it's hard enough to cover man-to-man, let alone with these guys that, were on the couch or on somebody's cut list, practice squad a week or so ago. Is there any way they get better? And I really have a feeling that they go 1-15 this year.
I don't think 1-15. I think they'll find a way potentially to get the 6 or 7 wins. That still is out there for the Baltimore Ravens. But to your point about their pass rush, I think it shows exactly how important Terrell Suggs was, because Elvis Dumervil had a terrific year last year, close to 18 sacks. But now if you're an opposing offense with Terrell Suggs no longer there, now you can really scheme your offensive blocking protections. You can double and triple team him, because you're not worried about anybody else, even with the blitz getting to your quarterback. That was a key last year to the Ravens, where they could rush 4 guys, knowing that 2 of those guys were going to put that kind of pressure on the quarterback. Then you can do exotic things in the back with your 7 guys protecting the pass. Now that you have to sell out more than ever and hope to get that pressure, if it doesn't get there, you get a lot of chunk plays against you, and we've seen that against the Baltimore Ravens.
And John Harbaugh, in one of his interviews this week, said we're going to continue blitzing. And I don't understand. I don't know the wisdom here with Harbaugh, Dean Pease. It's all a big question to me right now. There's a lot of other issues. I think it's the defense mainly. I mean, the offense most of the time has been able to come down. But I got to tell you something, guys. That game against the Cardinals, they get down the field, and I'm thinking, okay, they can score the touchdown here. But you know what? I had no faith in them making the 2-point conversion. So even if they scored, I just don't have any faith in them. Well, I don't know. It's going to be a long season. Long season. All right, Jeff Cole, what do you got? We got about a minute left. We're going to wrap this puppy up here.
Okay, well, first of all, Freddie, I want to thank you so much for being on our show, and I really have enjoyed your show on ESPN for all these years.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, I think this is the best chance the Ravens have for a win. I'm gonna say that the luck is gonna finally go the Ravens' way, 27-25 over San Diego.
And San Diego is beatable. It is at home. Those are all positives. My only problem is the Chargers have the number one ranked offense and number one ranked passing offense, and against a defense that can't stop anything, that concerns me. Philly Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Well, again, I mean, I can't wait to see my boys in the Super Bowl, and but next year when the Mets are the Phillies' doormat, then I'll be a happy situation. okay, maybe not. Only if we are able to steal a few Mets players that are. But I can't thank Freddie enough. As I said, I've listened to him for years. He knows what his stuff, and I hope he comes back. I'd be the first one to say that'd be fabulous.
That's great. All right, and this is
absolutely
why we love
you. We love you back.
Yeah. Freddie, as my compatriots here have said, thanks so much for being on the show. We've really enjoyed it. Lots of good information. And I tell you what, when the Eagles are in the Super Bowl, we'll have you back on the show.
That'll be fine. I mean, hopefully Chip Kelly will be the coach when that happens, but that'll be fine. So you might have to have me back sooner than that.
I think you would like to be back sooner than that. Indeed. All right. Thanks a lot, Freddie. Folks, that's going to do it for Baltimore Sports Talk here on MQFL Live on the blogtalkradio.com network. I'm Rob McQuay. For Jeff Coles, Philly Jeff Dyer, and Freddie Coleman of ESPN Radio, thanks for being with us. We'll see you again next week. Wait a second. We got to go to a new time, Jeff Coles, next week?
Let's talk about that off air. We've got to start. Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, we're going to look at maybe a day and time change, so keep aware, and we'll let you know. All right. That'll do it, guys. Have a great week. Enjoy the game tonight and all the games this weekend. And we'll talk again next week.
Thanks for listening to Baltimore Sports Talk here on MQFL Live on the blogtalkradio.com network. Join us again next week as we explore Baltimore sports.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Company Computer Guy.
Mr. Company Computer Guy.
You are the ruler of the RAM, the guru of the gigabyte, the monster of the memory.
Show me the way.
When we screw up the boot up, you are there. Without you, computers would megabyte.
Megabyte.
The countless hours we spend surfing the internet and accidentally stumbling upon porn sites would instead be spent working.
Working for the man.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Company Computer Guy. For it's you who keeps our logons logging and our hard drives hard.
You gotta see this porn site.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.